All right, Red Wings fans, we're back for another week, taking a little break, but we're coming back now for the new episode of The Obstructed View. Lots going on in Red Wings Nation since we last talked to you. I hope you didn't miss us too much, but we did miss you guys out there. So we got a great crew, though, this week. We've downsized a little bit, not in terms of content, but in terms of numbers. We're rolling two deep here, and then myself, obviously, on the show. First and foremost, welcoming back Michael Petrella from the production line. Mr. Petrella, how goes it?
It goes well, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Now, I know you are getting ready for the wedding stuff, getting ready. You're about, what, 2 months away now from tying
just about. Yeah, it's about 2 months pretty soon here. It's coming quick, man.
So for those of you that don't follow Petrella on Twitter, he's currently in the process of, and we were talking about this before the show, acquiring some Engelbert Humperdinck records. And if you want to know why, you can talk to him about it. But if you're anyone out there listening is hoarding some Humperdinck records, feel free to contact Mr. Petrella out there. Let him know about it. He's looking. He will reimburse you for whatever to get those there because they got a little arts and crafts project going on for the wedding. So we may... we may toss a little Engelbert on the show here later today. We'll have to see how it goes.
That would be swell. It would be the first time I ever heard
it. It would probably be the first time I've ever heard it, too. And it might very well be the first time our other guest has heard it. And this is a first for us on the show. We are bringing in somebody from outside the Red Wings family. He actually is a Pens fan, but we are willing to forgive and forget. From over at the absolutely exceptional Grindcast from the Sporting News, it is Sean Gentile. Sean, how are you doing today, my friend?
Chris, Mike, what's up, boys?
We are living. We are honored to have you on here. Obviously, if you guys aren't familiar with Sean, I strongly encourage you to check out the Grindcast podcast that he does with another Detroiter there, Craig Custance, who is, he's a quality guy and their stuff is absolutely phenomenal. It's, right about the same speed as we like to put out here on TOV. Not too serious, but full of good stuff, full of good information. So welcome to the show, Sean. It's a pleasure to have you on here, and we're looking forward to it.
Appreciate it, man. Hey, I was unaware that I was the first non-Red Wings person coming on the show, which is that's a hell of a lot to live up
and
to.
When we,
you know, I hope I don't disappoint
yeah,
you.
Yeah, dude, standards real low here, so don't – I think you'll be fine. They let me run this thing, so you know that standards right. Aren't going to be too high on this one. But
I would just like to say before I get any further, I know Petrella needs Engelbert Humperdinck records for his for his arts and crafts project. But if there's anybody out there that wants to sell them to me, I will outbid him. Oh. For my own personal use.
Ain't that important, brother.
I enjoy the dink. Yeah. What can I say?
We were just talking about, what was it? Can't keep my eyes off of you. Was that one of Engelbert's hits or whatever that,
Yeah, I would say that's the only song that anybody like under the age of 55 is.
And then Sean, obviously, he was talking about it beforehand and he said, this is, for those that watch these movies, 10 Things I Hate About You. That was Heath Ledger's tune there. So pop culture, little pop culture reference for you this morning.
There we go. We bring more than hockey
on
here.
The show. Speaking of hockey, though, we can dive in. And obviously, Sean, we know that you're a Pens fan here. So we're going to do a little Red Wings chat first. There's plenty going on that we can talk about that is not totally Red Wings related. But as we sit here from Red Wings Nation, since the last time we've talked to you guys out there, quite a bit has happened. First and foremost, a couple weeks ago, we see the captain, Steve Yzerman, breaks hearts all over the place, decides he's going to take the GM position down in Tampa Bay, rolls out of town in 5 years down there in Tampa Bay now, and he's going to be making some big cheddar down in the Hockey Bay, USA, as I was informed by some of my friends that live down there. But along the way, he's taking Pat Verbeek, Red Wing scout. He's going with him. We found that out this week that Verbeek will be taking off. And he's looking to take capologist Ryan Martin down there with him. Obviously, to run through the gamut real quick, the Wings, they'll re-sign Nick Lidstrom for 1 year. And then we're going at $6.2 million. And then they also, right at the end of the week, inked up Thomas Holmstrom for another 2 years. And he's going in at a $1.85 million cap hit over the next two seasons. Been a busy week for Red Wings fans. But Troy, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk about this Steve Yzerman thing, though, real quick. You know, obviously, we knew that this was coming at some point. Yzerman is the architect of Canada's gold medal run this year at the Olympics. heading on down to Tampa Bay. Are you surprised that he chose Tampa Bay for his destination, or were you thinking that this was going to be a thing where he was going to stick around with the Red Wings for a while?
I'm surprised it happened so quickly, although we shouldn't be. I mean, his stock won't be higher than it is immediately following the gold medal. And, you know, he's been a part of this organization in the front office for a few years, and they've always had success. There's no reason to think that he was going to stick around forever, especially if he wanted to run a team the way that Ken Holland does. He wasn't going to get that opportunity in Detroit anytime soon. So good for him. I wish him nothing but the best, and everyone should. It's ridiculous that anyone would wish he stay subordinate when he doesn't have to be. So good for him. I'm not very surprised it was Tampa. They were obviously courting him real hard, and it sounds like the new owner has his head screwed on straight, so that's good news for everyone in Florida. So good things in Tampa, I hope. And if the Wings can't win a Stanley Cup every year, I'd love it to be Tampa, just so Steve Yzerman can keep lifting it.
There you go. Now, Sean, when you look at this from obviously an East Coast perspective, an Eastern Conference perspective,
right.
Here.
When
you look at the Lightning, obviously there's some good there, there's some bad there. The good obviously being Stamkos, you got Hedman, you got some nice young talent there. The bad, you got some big heavy contracts. LeCavalier is making, he's still slated to make a ton of money. Next season, you got to try and re-sign Stamkos from his entry deal, and you've got, you know, however many millions of dollars already tied up in six players. What's the biggest challenge going to be for Yzerman with that organization coming in?
Well, you know what? We actually talked about this a couple weeks ago. Craig and I did, and I came around a little bit on the situation to start out with, because my stance on Yzerman was why I know, like, Stamkos is great, Hedman's great. Those are two huge building blocks to have, but I honestly like my initial reaction was, The guy can clearly have any GM job he wants. Like, and anything that opened up over the next, you know, X amount of years, he'd have been one of the first names to come to mind. So if I was him, and this is kind of the stance I took before, like I wouldn't even bother, because the ownership situation there just seemed like such a disaster, and there was like a certain amount of uncertainty coming in with Vinnick. But he really seems like you said, he seems like he has his head on straight in. I mean, really, once they get past, like, the LeCavalier contract is that's an albatross, like you said. But beyond that, I mean, you got St. Louis coming off the books after last season. I mean, like, they're gonna have cap space in beyond LeCavalier, so he should be able to work with it. And, you know, obviously when you have a building block like Stamkos with Hedman, those are two big hurdles to jump. So mm-hmm. I don't know. After this season, a lot of salary comes off the books. You got Stanley coming off the books and a couple other guys. So he'll have more than enough space to work with. I wouldn't be all that concerned about cap space if I were him.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think that you look at the situation and like you said, he could have gone anywhere, which is kind of, it's an interesting thing to think about in terms of what if he stayed one more year with Detroit, you know? And then I hear a comment from Ken Holland who take this with a grain of salt, and that he said, well, the day Lidstrom retires from the Red Wings is the day I retire. I don't believe that for a half second. I don't think anybody should, but if that's the truth, then why not if you're Yzerman, stick around? Because Lidstrom is now at the point in his career where he's going to go year to year. Like, he's not going to sign anything over a year deal. He's already said that. So I'm guessing Yzerman felt like he needed that to get out of Detroit to establish his legacy as a GM. Maybe this is something where he's going to love Detroit. He's going to be a Red Wing for life, obviously. But maybe he just felt he wasn't positioned to do it in Detroit from a front office standpoint. I don't know that we'll ever know, and I don't know that he'll ever tell. He's kind of a guarded guy, but I agree. This Tampa Bay situation is a little bit of a stretch in terms of, you know, what if Ottawa had something come open at some point? He's a big Ottawa guy. He's veered there. He would have been an easy fit. You never know, but obviously Steve thinks this is the time for him. He's made the move. He's down there, and now he said in his press conference when he was introduced, hey, I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to try and pilfer from the Red Wings, and that's kind of questionable at this point. I know he has already landed Red Wings scout Pat Verbeek, who he obviously played with from I believe it was 99 to 01. They were teammates on those Red Wings teams, and then he will come down and he, I don't believe they defined his role completely as what he'll do in the scouting department, but he will be part of the scouting organization for the Lightning. And then they're working on getting Red Wings' current capologist, Ryan Martin, down there to take over the assistant GM position. And Martin has obviously stopped attending meetings in Detroit with the Red Wings front office. It seems like it's all but a done deal. But, Sean, let me start with you. From an outsider's perspective, before I go to Petrella on this one, is this something that, you know, when you look at front offices around the league, is this something that you're okay with? You know, obviously, Yzerman saying, well, I'm probably not going to go back there, but and start taking people out of the office. But then he kind of does. Is this something that you're okay with from, like, a standpoint? Like, if this was Pittsburgh, would you be fine that if somebody came out of there and started pulling executives out? Or do you think that once you leave a place, you got to go do it yourself?
No, I'm fine with it, man. Those are just sort of the breaks of the game. I know Chuck Fletcher, who was the one of Shiro's assistants, took the Wild job last year. And he took a couple of people from scouting with him. I think those are just – I mean, it's an unfortunate thing if you care about the team that's getting raided. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that people are gonna err on the side of going with guys that they know. I mean, you can't expect guys to hire entirely new staffs. And so I guess what – so Yzerman's got Verbeek and then the other assistant GM that are heading with them. And that's – yeah, so I mean those are two guys. I think that's just kind of an unfortunate, you know, byproduct. But I don't know. I wouldn't have hard feelings over that. That's just the way it goes.
Petrella, what do you got? What do you think of him?
Yeah, I don't think it's as big a deal as people are going to make out of it. Obviously, it does kind of contradict that he was saying he wasn't going to raid the front office, but. You know, Sean got it right. You can't expect everyone to stick around forever. The Wings have had an embarrassment of riches in the front office and scouting and, you know, in management for two decades. Losing Pat Verbeek is – I'm not sure it's a blip on anyone's radar if it wasn't Yzerman that took him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not to say that he's not a good scout. But, you know, and the Ryan Martin thing is troubling because obviously he's kind of the guy in charge of the money and figuring out how the cap pieces fit together. But you can't blame him for wanting to leave. They're good friends from what I understand, and if Steve Yzerman called me and said, "Hey, you want to come work for me in Tampa?" The answer would be yeah, I do. And the Wings shouldn't be too hard of feelings because they've had three general manager caliber GMs. You know what I mean? Between Jim Nill, right, Ken Holland, and Steve Yzerman, like, what? I don't understand what else you could want. You can't have them all. Yeah, it'd be great to have Shiro too because he's done an all right job, and you know, but Jesus, man. Yeah, at some point you gotta take a chill pill and like what you've got going.
Well, part of it is that it's Verbeek too. I mean, he was a name NHL player, so I think that affects people's perception too, because he's a guy you've heard of. Mm-hmm. I think.
Right.
I mean, but really, at the end of the day, it's one pro scout in the capologist. I mean, I think that's more than reasonable. Yeah. If he came in and was, you know, ganking the secretaries and you know, stealing office supplies and stuff, that would be one thing. But I mean, seriously, it's two guys, and I think I think that kind of falls under the umbrella of just, you know,
the breaks
of the game.
I'd say, go ahead, dude. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say another thing is knowing Yzerman as we do, you know, not obviously not personally, but as we've been used to knowing him. I don't have any doubt whatsoever that he made a phone call first to ask if it was cool. Mm-hmm. Not at all.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sure they're like, look, you know, we'd love to keep Ryan Martin, but, you know, if it's his job, if he wants it, then, you know, you got to talk to him. I don't doubt for a minute Yzerman was like, hey, I'm not going to take any of your guys, landed in Florida and started making phone calls to pilfer. I just don't – that's just not how it is with him. He's never been a guy that's hid – you know, his intentions or his love for the Detroit Red Wings. I'm sure he's not doing it to spite the Red Wings or anyone within the organization. I think he's just doing the best he can to put the best people in line to help him do well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I think, you know, as a Red Wings fan, Sean made a good point. You know, it's Verbeek. He's a name kind of guy. Now, the name that if I ever hear Yzerman goes after, if he ever goes after Håkan Andersson over in Sweden, our lead Swedish scout, I swear to God, I'll go down to Tampa and stab Stevie myself. Because that guy. And, you know, most people don't even know who that guy is.
He's untouchable. That's fine.
Yeah. So, but you know what? Good for – I like the idea of getting Stevie off the ground, with the right support people there. And I think the biggest thing is, I think it's a great move for Yzerman to come get Ryan Martin, who, let's be clear, hasn't agreed to go down there yet. It looks like he will. But I think it's the right move, because one of the question marks around Yzerman was, yeah, he built a great Canadian team that wasn't affected by any salary cap. There was no salary cap on that team. He would just pull all stars together. How is he going to work under the cap? And when you got a numbers guy like Martin coming down there, overseeing that thing and making sure that they're making good financial decisions, I think that that's one of the best things you can have. So,
yeah.
To Stevie, good luck down in Tampa. I'll be pulling for you. My mom lives just north of Tampa, so that's pretty exciting. I can get down there, maybe catch some games.
Nice.
I'm a fan of yours until you play the Red Wings, and then I hope we stomp you. But, you know, that's just that. But speaking of the Red Wings, now let's bring it back into the Wings here a little bit. Obviously, some big name signings this past week for the Wings. They get the deal done that relieves everybody in Hockey Town, re-inking Captain Nicklas Lidström for another year at $6.2 million, taking a good size hit off that $7.45 he made last year. So, you know, obviously good things there. And then at the end of the week, we find out that the Wings have re-upped with Thomas Holmstrom, who is also taking a pay cut in terms of he was making 2.25 against the cap. He's now making 1.85 over the next two seasons. So, Petrella, I'm going to start with you on this one. I know, right? Good Lord. They trimming some stuff there. But Petrella, you look at Lidström. You know what this guy's meant. You're a big fan of his. You know what he means to this team. How big is it that they get him for one more year and kind of leading the team and continuing the continuity that this team played with last season?
Huge. I also don't think it's his last year. I mean, obviously a lot can happen between now and next June, but I don't think he's going to have such a dramatic decline in his ability or will to play in a single season. And I mean, say what you want about this last year that he declined, you know, it was the biggest decline of his career. I don't see it so much as others maybe make a big stink about it. He's also 40 years old. So, you know, I'm not sure it's his last year, but if it were to be his last year, I think it was necessary for him to be there anyway, because we have Erickson who
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Pardon my French here, but he sucks something fierce. And coming in,
you better not
Kindle,
let your mom hear that. She loves Johnny Erickson.
She knows every time he does something nice. Stupid. I'm like, look, he's not. He's a huge, huge man, and I know that's like, yay, big body. But if he's not willing to use it, who gives a damn how big he is? And Kindle coming into the fray, you know, Malik said something about him probably being the seventh defenseman this year. I don't see him coming up to be a Meech, which is why I'm not sure they'll re-sign Lilia, but that's a story for another day. But to have Kindle in his first full season with the Wings and having a guy like Nick Lidström on the ice with him, maybe not as a pairing, but at least in game situations, like, that's a huge deal for Kindle. And I'm sure that it had something to do with enticing him to come back is, you know, if we can make a transition – Maybe it's next year or the year after, whatever it may be, where Kindle's kind of our big money guy, maybe not big money as in paycheck, but big money ice time guy, then, you know, it's worth every penny to have Lidström there kind of showing him how you do things and how you don't.
I think in that same vein, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with our new resident crime guy here, Brendan Smith, who's he's causing some problems, but I know, right?
Yeah.
Smith is the guy, though. I think from a talent standpoint, if he can get serious about playing professional hockey, and if he can deal with that grind, I think we need to have Lidström there, kind of just giving every ounce of education he can to Brendan Smith, because I think even more so than Kindle, I think Smith is going to be the guy that steps in down the line and really takes over for a guy like Lidström. So.
Yeah,
but
no, I don't doubt that for a second. I'm concerned that he won't. If Lidström doesn't have another 3 years in him, you know how the Wings are with leaving guys in Grand Rapids. They might not just kind of bequeath the position onto Smith like they do everyone else, particularly a guy with such kind of like some maturity issues. So you know, it'd be great because obviously the talent's there. He is the top flight guy of the future. It's just a matter of if he can keep his head geared on and make sure everything is moving smoothly with the legs,
sure,
you know?
Sure. I think we'll see Smith at a few points this year. I think they will probably bring him up. Injuries, obviously, a big point of this last season. And, you know, when we're seeing guys like Doug Janik in the lineup for Detroit, I think Brendan Smith's a much better option now. And they'll try and find some time for him to come up and learn from Lidström. But, Sean, let me ask you this. From an outsider looking in at the Wings, obviously, and Petrella brought this up, you know, Lidström is 40. there's been some question about whether or not he's still able to bring it at the level that he used to. I know there were some points where he looked a little slow, but the guy still finished it at a team best. I believe it was plus 22 on the ice this year. You know, the guy, he's a player. But when you look at Nick Lidstrom and coming back for the Wings, is this more of like a, like we talked about, kind of a, let's wait until we get some guys to move up in and replace him, and, you know, he's still one of the best? Or is this something where it's like, yes, Nick Lidstrom is the real deal, and he is going to continue to bring it, and as an opponent, I should be worried that Lidstrom is still on that blue line?
I would probably say it's somewhere in between, really. I mean, like, I don't want to sell the guy short. He's Nick Lidstrom. He's, what, a six-time Norris Trophy winner. I mean, my God. But I think having a guy like Smith coming up through the system, whether he turns out to be a knucklehead or not, I guess is up for debate. You assume he'll get his stuff together, like you said. But I mean, he's still a force to be reckoned with. I think people made too much of I think his decline was overstated a little bit, because in my mind he's not a Norris finalist anymore, but he was in that next tier. I would say that you know, if you expand the field to six, he should be in the discussion. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still a top flight defenseman. Now, the issue, though, and it'll be interesting to see. I know what his deal is for 6.2 next mm-hmm. year, and that's reasonable. But it'll be interesting to see if he keeps on tagging on these 1 year deals to see if, like, the salaries continue to kind of drop down, and really how far down on the salary scale he's willing to go, because 6.2, the defensemen are expensive in general, and you're going to overpay for everybody, but it'll be interesting to see what kind of happens with his salary moving forward, right? Like, as opposed to everything else.
Sure.
To
me. I think we know, and you know, I went on and talked to one of the radio stations in Montreal, and then one of the questions they asked me was, well, what about Lidstrom? What do you think he's going to go for? And I said, and Petrella, you know this, we've talked about this for a long time, is that I said, he'll go for no less than $6 million, and here's why. Because Brian Rafalski's making $6 million, and he will not make...
He can't make less money than Brian Rafalski, obviously.
You sure as hell can't, and you knew that was going to happen. That's fine. Like, I'm totally cool with it, because I think that Nick Lidstrom is worth every penny of that $6.2 million. So, but I do think it's interesting... And for the Wings, getting him at this price this year is a huge step forward, because and then obviously with a guy like Holmstrom, who's going to take a pay cut too, is the Wing. This is a crucial year for the Wings in re-signing some players. We will not have this discussion next season if they can sign some guys to multi-year deals as we move forward here, because at that point everybody's taken care of. We've got some of the younger guys that are still restricted free agents, need some deals done, and we'll touch on them in just a second, but. To get Lidstrom at this price right now is a huge, huge benefit for the Wings, and I think it really helps them in the long term. So we'll see, though. I agree. These year-to-year deals, they make me kind of wonder, like, where we're going to go in terms of price point. I still firmly believe the lowest he'll go is $6 million. He won't take a penny less than Rafalski, even though I think Rafalski, you know, like you said, Sean, they're overpaid. Obviously, you're overpaying for a defenseman. I wouldn't say that Rafalski's worth six at this point, but that's just me.
No, but that's a league-wide thing.
Sure.
I've said this before. Defensemen as a rule are overpaid in my opinion. So if you're dropping 6.2 on Lidstrom, you could obviously end up doing a lot worse.
I totally agree. Speaking of dropping some money now, we'll move along here to our friend Thomas Holmstrom, who is now coming back. The net front presence, the pest. He is re-signed for 2 years at 1.875 a season. So obviously, 37 years old, coming back for two more years. He's had injury problems, but then he kind of finds the golden ticket this season, and 25 goals. Just a great campaign for Holmstrom in front of the net this year, especially with all the injuries that happen. I don't know, though, Mike. You look at this guy, and I'm wondering. He signs a 2 year deal, and it's a great thing that we've got him locked up for 2 years. I'm not sure that he finishes out these 2 years. I know. What do you think?
I think he does, unless there's some sort of catastrophic reason why he can't, like his back finally explodes from all the lumber that hits it. But I mean, he's in a 35 and up contract now, which means no matter what happens, that money counts against the cap for 2 years. So I don't think there's anything, you know. you know, barring injury like we already mentioned, I don't think there's any reason he would slow down so much in 1 year that he couldn't finish the second year. But, you know, it's the game of hockey. Anything could happen. But having him for that price for 2 more years, and no disrespect to Dino Cicerelli, this is the best man who has ever done what any one of those guys did, standing in front of goalies, screening, tipping pucks, and he's just – he is incredible. For that money, are you kidding me? All 29 other teams in the league would have paid him double that immediately on July 1st. So, once again, he takes a huge dip like he always has. He's always earned less than he probably could have gotten in the free agent market. And it's clear he wants to be a Red Wing and he wants to finish a Red Wing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sean, when you look at a guy like Holmstrom and maybe, you know, your mouth to Marc-Andre Fleury's ear here that you know, we can take it easy on his back a little bit. You know, obviously, like Charles said, the guy, you know, he's getting up there. But this guy is, you know, he's a troublemaker all over the place and he causes problems. And he is one of the best in the business. But as an opponent, you know, obviously you got to be a little bit concerned that now Holmstrom is coming back for 2 more years.
Absolutely. There's if you're not a Red Wings fan, there's not much that's more annoying than watching Homer kind of camp out in front of the. In the crease there. So yeah, I think as someone who doesn't root for the Red Wings, this doesn't make me happy because I don't care how bad the guy's back is or anything like that. He's when he's on the ice, he's still a force. And to get him at what was it? I'm sorry, what the number was like
1.85 or 1.875.
You take that every day. Yeah. I mean, and I'm looking at his ice time from the last. From you know, February through March or something, and they use him the right way. He's playing, you know, 15-16 minutes a game. I think that's fine. You limit his ice time so his back doesn't lock up on him, and you take whatever you can get. It's $1.8 million, and anytime you can give $1.8 million for a guy that is the best at what he does, and he is still. I think you do that, and it should make Wings fans happy, honest to God, because that's not any sort of prohibitive cost for them. So I do that 10 times in a row for sure.
Absolutely. I'm 100% on board with you there, Sean, and Petrella, you too. This is a great thing for them, and he's a kind of guy, though, and that's the thing. Kind of along the lines with Lidstrom, like we talked about. There's nobody that's just going to immediately step in and take the position of Thomas Holmstrom whenever he goes. There are some guys that are working to be that kind of a guy. You look at a guy maybe like Abdelkader and even Cleary's sort of redefining his game a little bit to kind of do something like that. But you can't just, you know, Holmstrom learned from Cicerelli, and you need the same process in place here to have somebody really just come in, learn from Thomas Holmstrom, and the longer you have him there to teach, the better. Obviously, the faster you get rid of a guy like Brett Lebda, who's breaking his foot in shot, you know, in practice with these shots, is a great thing. I'm very excited. Lebda is probably not coming back to the Wings, but those are the things that you do worry about with Thomas Holmstrom is that, you know, he's getting up there and it's a high risk job that he's doing. So you hope that he can stay healthy. And if he does, I agree, he's the best. And I know we've been hearing throughout these Stanley Cup finals that, oh, Byfuglien might be taking that role. He's doing it just like Holmstrom does. And you've heard other guys.
It's not the same.
You're right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's nobody that does it like Holmstrom.
This is much of a testament to Holmstrom's skill and desire, and it is like all that stuff. I gotta admit, I had no idea he was only 6 feet 200 pounds. No clue. And that's what they list him as is 6 foot even like 200 pounds on the dot. Which is amazing to me. There are a lot of guys who are a lot bigger than that that don't have a fraction of his effectiveness in the crease. So that says it all right there. That he's not the biggest guy in the world, but I mean my God, there's nobody better at what he does than Thomas Holmstrom for sure.
Mm-hmm. And especially in a league now where the play is a little more wide open, there's a lot more emphasis on scoring, and it's a real testament to the role that he plays that he is still regarded as the best, and he has been the best at this throughout his entire career pretty much, and it's spanned from those first cups that the Wings won in 97 to post lockout hockey. Holmstrom is still a force to be reckoned with, and like you said, anytime you can get that guy in the fray, for that price, you're going to do it, and you're going to do it every single time. So glad to have him back. But, you know, we've talked about the free agency. We're going to move on here real quick. But I do want to say to you, Petrella, big news this week, though, coming up. Can we get Bertuzzi re-inked? I'm not saying we can. I'm not saying we will. I know you don't care. I know you're a big fan of him, but there's some grumbling that he may take a look at the free agent market. What are you thinking about this?
Shocker! Just like a few years ago when he took $7 more to go play in Anaheim, I got to tell you, I'd fall off my chair in disbelief that he would do such a thing again.
Petrella, you know, like you're saying, obviously the guy, he's made ruminations that, hey, he wants to stay in Detroit. This is a great place. And then all of a sudden now we're starting to get that doubt about, is he really going to stay here? You know, he could roll out of town. So we'll see. I don't know. But Todd Bertuzzi, we'll see what happens.
I'd love it if he went somewhere else just so he's – I mean, here's the thing. It's win-win for me because everyone knows how I feel about him. I think he's just brutal. And yeah, he did certainly turn his game around, and he was a huge contributor when he needed to be. And I will never understate that because he was a very important part of the Red Wings in like December and January. Someone had to score, and he was doing it. So good for him. And I'll never say an ill word about that effort. I just don't think he fits the system. I've never thought he fit the system. So if he goes somewhere else, great. If he stays, that's going to mean awesome things for the production line because whenever he does anything positive and or negative, we reap the benefits.
You do. You definitely do. And, Sean, I'll ask you real quick. You know, the number that we're talking around here in Detroit is $1.5 million, which is what Bertuzzi made this past season. It would probably be no more than a two-year deal. And he may or may not hit the open market to take a look at what's out there. I mean, is he worth more than $1.5 million to you? Like Petrella said, he really only had a month or month and a half where he picked up his game. So is he worth it?
No. No.
Not even close.
He completely fell apart down the stretch. He had whatever. The last 2 months – I mean, here's what saved Bertuzzi, and here's probably why he's seeing dollar signs flash up in front of his face again. Is because he was fine in the playoffs. He potted a couple and like he upped his game from where he was by the end of the regular season. But I watched enough Wings, man. He was brutal by the end. And for him to expect more than $1.5 million or like what's the guy gonna do? Seriously, is he gonna take $1.8 million to go play in, you know, for some half ass team? No. I mean, like just Take the $1.5 million, stick around, don't make the same mistake that you did in going to Anaheim. And here's what should annoy you guys, frankly, and Petrella, I can tell this has you half pissed off already. I think that his season ending thing, like immediately after the playoffs, you know, it seemed like someone asked him like right off the bat, what's going on? Are you going to stick around? And he sounded like a guy who learned from his mistakes. And he sounded like a guy who admitted that he was happier in Detroit than he had been in the last couple stops. So for him to like maybe start sort of, you know, edging back towards making a cash grab is pretty soft. And I think he should take whatever they offer and just you know be
like
happy.
Like everyone else has for two decades. Shut your mouth. Take a
absolutely.
Cut.
Absolutely. Play and you know and make another run at the cup because that's what's gonna happen. I mean, seriously, he's not. He what does he get? He'll get $2 million from a shitty team who needs to get away from the cap floor or something. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to do it. Like at best, he makes a lateral move and makes $1.5 million for another contender.
Mm-hmm.
And if he wants to do that, more power to him. But if this is about an extra $300,000 a year or whatever, he's as much of a jag as everyone seems like they think he is.
Right on the money, dude. And here's the other thing too. You talk about the money aspect. You talk about where is he going to go. But you also talk about the culture around the Red Wings. I think out of any stop that he's made since the incident with Steve Moore, obviously, there's no other place that he's going to find that is going to be as conducive to his rehabilitation as a person as in Detroit. He's surrounded by consummate professionals in that Detroit locker room. What are you going to do? You're going to go to Edmonton with a bunch of rookies up there? No. You don't need that. You need guys like Lidstrom, Draper, Holmstrom, all the guys that have been around. They understand that, you know, this guy's obviously, he's been through a lot. He's sorry about it. And he needs to just finish out somewhere where he's going to feel supported. He made a big deal about during the regular season. Well, I want a place for my kids to settle down in, and I want to settle my family somewhere finally. Okay, you're going to get that opportunity in Detroit, so now put your money where your mouth is and you know, go for it. Like, but don't
That's why you just don't say things right. like that. Like I'm a proponent of that. I mean, like that's fine. If the dude wants to make a cash grab, more power to him. If that's what he values, fine. But don't take time in the course of the season to, you know, talk about how much you've been accepted and yeah. how in what a mistake it was to leave in the first place. And then, you know, 4 weeks after the fact, you're edging towards, you know, oh, you know, this that's bogus, and I really wish stuff like that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, as much as I don't like him and I don't think he fits on the team, hearing what he said after the end of the run was encouraging. You know, it was like, yes, I want to be here. I like this team. These guys treat me well. And like Sean said, I think he needs the Wings a hell of a lot more than the Wings need him. So, absolutely. You know, if he wants to change his tune now, and I hadn't heard that until you guys mentioned it. So if that's true, then I, you know, granted, I'm not as level-headed as Ken Holland is, immediately cutting off all talks and be like, fine, go fuck yourself and go find your money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
no, that honestly would be, I mean, maybe not in so many words, obviously, come from Holland, but that would, you know, that's a more than rational response. If he wants to play hardball for something like that, and obviously I have no idea if he does, but it's like, you know, if you want to take a small amount of money to go somewhere else, you know, see you later, dude.
Yeah, sorry. I agree. And let's,
I mean,
go ahead, dude.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say a couple years ago when the same thing happened, I didn't like how he fit in. You know, we made the trade in March. He kind of shat the bed until April or May. And then, you know, everyone made it clear they wanted to re-sign him. And we did our best. And from what I understand, the numbers, like Sean was just saying, the numbers that the Wings were offering were something like $250,000 less than Anaheim offered. But it was the second year that apparently the Wings weren't offering at that time that enticed him to go to Anaheim, which promptly dropped him on his ass and sent him somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So
he's not getting more than 2 years from anybody. Nobody's giving Todd Bridges. Oh no, I'm not saying that you're saying that. So that shouldn't be an issue at this point. You know, no. if you can get a 2 year deal out of the Wings for $1.5 million per, oh my God, that dude should have signed yesterday. Seriously,
there it is. I you know, it's Todd Bertuzzi, whatever. Like we'll see what happens. And to Petrella, to your point here, there's nothing that's come out that said he's going to go and look at free agency. It's all of a sudden you're just starting to hear some different discussions happen, and the tone is changing. And I remember last year when we went through the Hossa drama of whether or not he was going to come back, and you kind of keyed in on things that Ken Holland said. And, you know, there's been no bones about the fact that it was going to go Lidstrom, Holmstrom, and then Bertuzzi in the pecking order of getting them re-signed. And now somebody asked Holland at the end of last week, what's going on with that? And he says, well, I've had some initial discussions with Todd's agent. You know, we've thrown some numbers around. I don't know where it's going to go. And so when you hear Ken Holland say something like that, it's not necessarily encouraging. Whereas when they talked about Holmstrom, at the end of the day with the Holmstrom thing, it was kind of like, we're confident we're in a good place with him. Like, you heard the reassuring thing. And then now you hear this stuff about Bertuzzi, and then you hear from Bertuzzi's camp, well, maybe we'll go and look and see what we get on free agency. And nobody's saying he will. He could come in tomorrow morning and sign that deal, and we all look stupid for it. But at the same time, he hasn't earned the benefit of the doubt in this situation because he's screwed us once before.
Oh yeah, and I don't blame you guys for coming into it, you know, with a skeptical eye, because like you said, it happened before. But for Holland to kind of intimate, like, we'll see where it's going, like, that leads me to believe that they're further apart than they should be. Like it should be an open and shut case as far as I'm concerned. You say you made $1.5 million last year, fine, you make it again. I can't imagine what he would counter, because at the end of the day, the guy's 34 and in declining production and has a history of signing places and, you know, being a bust.
Right.
So I'm not sure what else the guy would want. Like, is he asking for 2.5 a year?
Right.
I mean, my God, how far apart could they be? It shouldn't be much.
And here's the thing, and Sean, you make a great point here, is that, you know what, if Bertuzzi feels like he earned himself a payday raise for whatever, his month of production last year, fine. If I'm Ken Holland, I'll sit and look at the books and I say, okay, Todd, you know what? We'll give you 2 this year, and then we'll give you 1 in your last year, because that's going to be it for you. You're not going to play in 2 years. So we'll front load you on this first year, and then because the cap hit will still stay at 1.5, it's right where they want it. So if that's what it's about, then fine. Yeah. I mean, like, but there's ways around this. I just don't understand where they're going here.
And another thing is, like, it's clearly on not the same scale, but I'm a contractor. Like, I have to negotiate my contracts, you know, sometimes 5 or 6 times a year with my business. So here's the deal, though. We're certainly not talking $1.5 million. But if he thinks he's worth $1.8 million, let's say, and, you know, his current employer, who clearly has affection for him like no other team has recently, says, you know, we still think you're worth $1.5 million. You shut your mouth and you do your job. You don't risk going back out and, you know, having nothing. And I'm sure he did an offer somewhere. But if it's really about that, if it's 1.8 and moving, like Sean said, 1.8 and moving to Atlanta, or 1.5 and staying in Detroit, being productive where they've actually embraced you as opposed to everywhere else that boos you out of the goddamn building, you take it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. I don't know. I don't know if this is coming from the playoffs or what, but the guy, 3 goals in January. You know, February is obviously an abbreviated month because of the Olympics. But he had no goals in 7 games in February. 2 goals in March. 2 goals in April. I mean, like the production, like you said, after that tear he went on, that like by all accounts, you know, helped keep them afloat whenever they're really struggling. I mean, for God's sakes, man, like you crapped out over the last 4 months of the season. So just don't, you know, be like, keep perspective of it, and don't ask for $2.5 million a year.
I had that bet earlier in the year. I know Chris will remember it with Andy in Norway about, you know, when he had, I think it was like 14 by New Year's, and the bet was always if he scores 20 or more, I'll redesign the entire site to be pro Todd Bertuzzi, pictures everywhere, love him to pieces. But if he fails to hit 20, then he's, you know, whatever it was. So the point is, at 14 around New Year's, I looked foolish and was like, oh shit, he's going to hit 25, maybe 30. But at the same time, I never felt discouraged. I was like, there's no way in hell he hits 20. I don't know why. Right. I just had this feeling like he is going to either completely collapse, or he's going to disappear when, surprise, everyone comes back from injury and he's no longer relied on to be an offensive player. And if you're not – look, first of all, you know, I played but at an extremely menial level compared to these guys. But if you put me with Val Filppula and Henrik Zetterberg, I'm scoring 20 goals.
Wow, bold. Right there. Ken Holland. Get Michael Pacioia a deal right now.
I'll take league minimum to prove it.
Yeah. Oh my God!
Incentive loaded deal.
All he wants is use of a nice car, maybe a parking slot. You know, maybe a hot dog before the game. It'll be good.
Not even that. Not even that. Just a uniform with the correct spelling of my name on it, and I'll be there.
Oh man.
That's tougher than you think that's tougher than you think with Italian names like this too, man.
I know.
Petrella,
I know
Gentile, it's not easy.
I've gotten plenty of it. Plenty of it. I don't know where you get these extra vowels. I know we have lots of vowels in our, but Jesus, man, there ain't that many.
I get butchered.
Dude, it's Hollis. It's pretty easy.
Hollis, yeah, whatever, dude. God, you are out of this. You are out of this.
I am. My Western European self here is, you know, whatever. But I got to admit here, I'm impressed, Sean. You've made it through all kinds of Red Wings talk this morning, and not like committed suicide on here. So we're not. Great.
Yeah, and there were certain things that I was just making up as I went along. So
that's exactly what we do.
Yep,
you guys can go back.
It sounded good.
So hey,
I won't say exactly what it was, but you can go back and guess. It'll be a fun
exercise. What did Sean make up? Hey, I like that, because if we did that for me, you could probably just pick any point that I'm talking and it'd be made up. But guys, obviously, you know, we've talked about the Wings. There's this whole other thing that's going on right now in the NHL. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's the Stanley Cup Finals. We're gonna change gears here a little bit. Blackhawks and Flyers in the finals, obviously. It's been quite the series. Chicago takes the first two, Philadelphia takes the next two at home. Home teams are holding serve right here. I think one of the big surprising things, and Sean, we'll start here with you, is the scoring in this series. We opened up game one, and it was like just trading goals back and forth, and nobody wanted to stop them. And I think through 4 games now, we are at the highest scoring Stanley Cup finals in history. When you look at it, you know, obviously Chicago has some firepower. They could put some goals.
Right.
I'm not sure that you would call Philly a big offensive juggernaut, but, you know, they got some players that can that put some points up. But is this a symptom of just bad defense or poor goaltending, or is it just the offensive being too strong here?
I think that the goaltenders have been pretty poor. I think Niemi, his focus, he loses it at times. I was amazed, especially on one of the goals in the last game, where everybody just completely lost track of Giroux, including Niemi, and he's the last line of defense. You got to know that he's hanging out down by the, you know, down by the goal line, and he completely lost it, and that was sort of an endemic, I think, of a lot of the goals that he's let in, and even still, just his general sort of demeanor in net, where there's stretches where you just don't feel like he's paying attention, mm-hmm. And then with Leighton, he looks a lot more tentative in this round than he did in the last. He stays pretty far back in his crease, which I don't like, and I think that was kind of embodied by the Eager goal, where he just didn't even attempt it to cut off the angle. So I don't know. I think it's been both goaltenders have been, you know, mediocre at best. And then, but you know, by that same token, I think you got to give guys like Giroux, and I know this is just gonna burn your guys' asses, but Liano, obviously, I think guys like that have really stepped up. I've been a big Claude Giroux fan because I watch. I'm based in Charlotte, and you know, like I said, I grew up watching Eastern Conference hockey, so I watch a lot of these guys, and I've been a big Giroux fan for some time now. I think he's gonna be a solid player in this league for a long time. He's really strong on his skates. I'm impressed by him in general. Mm-hmm. So I think it's guys like that stepping up, and I also think it's just a general sort of mediocre showing from both goaltenders for sure.
Absolutely.
And then you got guys like Hjalmarsson in there who are just you know who are just playing with their heads up their asses for certain stretches of time. So it's been a mix of all three. I know that's kind of a cop out answer.
No, I think it embodies everything that we've seen here and in these finals. And Hjalmarsson, I'm amazed at. You know, like you said, head up his ass a couple plays. This guy's up for, you know, his contract's up at the end of the year, and I don't know that he's making a strong case to come back to Chicago, but they're going to have to look at him, though, potentially, with all their cap issues that they're going to have in this offseason.
Right.
You know, I think he's making the least amount of money of any of the defensemen they have on that roster right now at like $875,000. So is he worth it? Is he going to kind of fit in there? I would expect more of him trying to make a case for himself in these playoffs, but man, he was brutal in game four. Absolutely brutal. So
in his defense, I thought he was good in games one through three. He blocked a lot of shots. He was playing fine, but that showing in four, man, that was painful to watch.
It was bad.
In his ice time reflected it. He was nailed to the bench for the most part after those two goals that he let up.
He sure was. And, you know, we'll touch on this here. Let me touch on this real quick, and Petrella, I'll throw it over to you. But you know, one of the big topics that I've been reading about since game four, though, is Coach Quenneville seems to have this thing, I thought I saw it earlier this year, and everybody kind of told me it wasn't a big deal, and whatever, I just rolled with it. But good Lord, I don't know that I've seen anybody throw the lines into a blender more quickly than Quenneville does. And game four was just like he was like lottery numbers, just picking them. Like, you play with you, play with you. You know, there was somebody that said we half expected to see Cristobal Huey out on the power play at some point because of just like the way he was calling it out. So, you know, Petrella, like, do you see that as being effective? Or, you know, I know we harp on a guy like Babcock a lot for maybe not mixing it up the way he should, but is it this being a little counterproductive in your mind?
I wouldn't be surprised if this came from up on high Scotty Bowman. That was exactly how Bowman used to run the lines in Detroit. There was, you know, we like to always play with the lines and make our little charts and say this is who plays with who on the Red Wings, but during those years when Bowman was behind the bench, I'm sure you guys both remember, it was impossible.
Oh, yeah.
It was absolutely impossible to predict who was going to play with who, not only from game to game, but from line to line. So if that's an effective method of coaching, which clearly it was for Scotty Bowman, I'm not going to say that's the reason he won 11 billion Stanley Cups, but if that was something that he can instill into somebody else Quenneville or whoever to say, you know, you have to analyze every single moment of every single play and then adjust on the fly accordingly. And I'm loath to give Quenneville the kind of credit that one would need to kind of have that skill. But if he does have that in him and he's doing that, good on him. That's awesome. Good for him. If he's finding a way to make it work, well, obviously these games 3 and 4, something wasn't working. But if that's what he's doing and he's doing it by design and it is effective, then, yeah, I could see that coming from upstairs saying, look, this is how I did it. If you want to give it a shot, we trust you to do it. I mean, that might be all confidence one needs to make such a decision.
Mm-hmm. Totally. It is what it is, man. Coaching styles vary from bench to bench around this league. Like I said, you know, Bowman, like you said, actually, Bowman used to do this all the time, and I tracked all these lines this year, and that would have killed me trying to do it with Scotty Bowman out there because you just throw people out at random. But then you get a guy, like we said, Babcock, kind of keeps it a little closer to the vest. He doesn't, you know, it doesn't change it up quite as much, quite as drastically. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? We'll see what happens, but you know, Sean,
it's fun to watch, man, by the way. Yeah, the Blackhawks power play is hilarious because I'm the world's biggest Dave Bolin fan. Like, I've owned Dave Bolin in fantasy leagues for basically 2 seasons. I love the guy. But whenever I look out at the Blackhawks power play and I see Bolin out there, you know, like, that's like endemic, I think, of what you guys are talking about. Like, God bless the guy. He's phenomenal. But you're not expecting to see Super Dave Bolin out there on the power play. Like, he's flipping stuff pretty severely by that point.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. But, you know, then we look on the other side. We go to the other bench and with Peter Laviolette over there. And Sean, you already touched on this. You get a guy that we has been a big topic of discussion in Detroit now. Ville Leino of Mike Petrella's famous Leino Lounge out there, which the press box there. But Ville Leino has come out of left field in these playoffs and is I believe set the rookie scoring record for the Flyers.
Yeah, yes.
Oh year. My God. So I don't know. First of all, let's go outsider first. Sean, when you look at Leino and what he's done so far, what do you make of this guy, and what do you make of what he's doing? I mean, I'm not going to say that this guy is scoring pretty goals, because it seems like every time he scores a goal, it's going off somebody else's back, or, you know, it's, you know, hitting off of the goal light and just kind of falling behind the Emmy. But what do you make of Leino's performance so far?
Well, I think that line in general, and I'm as loathe to give Scott Hartnell credit as you are to give Leino credit, I think, but you know, he's been an effective player, and I think those guys particularly, they've found something to work with. I don't know. I think Leino was an interesting case because I think at the beginning he was overrated based on last season and based on the Wings, you know, deserved kind of reputation for developing guys like him. And then, but I also thought I don't know. I don't watch him as closely as you do, but I was shocked. I know that it was a cap related move, but. But to see them just dump him basically for Tollefson, I don't know. I wasn't on board with that from the start. I think he had too much talent. Whether he had a 10-cent hit or whatever, that's up for debate, obviously. But I don't know if that was the right move. Like even without hindsight.
And here's so to jump in. I put up a post late last night, kind of going the same route that you were talking about. And they kept a guy. They kept a guy that we knew was going to be gone at the end of the season, in Jason Williams, who was making almost twice what Leino was making, and they kept him around on top of, you know, instead of Leino. And to me, that boggles the mind. If Ken Holland had even an inkling that Leino was going to figure it out at some point, and that's what the language kind of you're inferring from the things that they're saying now, why get rid of him and keep a guy like Williams around who's just a spare part that's going to be gone next year? So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think he must have. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
All I was going to say is I think there was, you know, in disrepair. Like the relationship there, whether it's Babcock and Leino or the entire team and Leino, whatever it may be, I think the trading him was indicative of us as in the Red Wings, the organization, finally realizing that, you know what, it's not going to work here. If you ask me my opinion, I think it's the opposite of Todd Bertuzzi syndrome. It's like he just needed the right fit, and he was not going to get that in Detroit. last year when he was a call-up, he was a very nice player. Very nice player when they get him in the right situations and with the right line mates and stuff, but he was not that caliber for a whole season, at least not yet, in Detroit. And it was like, you're going to play fourth line minutes or you're going to be in the box, and clearly that made him upset, and he didn't contribute in a way that he felt he could, which obviously then put him a little farther down in the dumps. And Philly gave him the opportunity to play with real players that were going to help him do what he does, which is be an offensive player. And he's a very, very nice player, and no one ever doubted that. I just think that the fit wasn't right in Detroit, whether it was the system or whether it was the insistence on needing to play top 6 minutes when you hadn't really earned them the way that the wings make you earn them. Right. Something happened where no one should be surprised that he's a nice hockey player in Philly. Nobody should be surprised. It's just a matter of he wasn't going to get this opportunity in Detroit. He never would have been this player in Detroit. I mean, he may have, but it certainly wasn't happening this year or next. And it was, if there was something that you could not fix, whether he was so upset about being in the box or not playing as much or with the right line mates or whatever it may be, then it was best to dump him now before you had another year of him on the salary cap.
Well, here's what I would say to that though, and I don't disagree with you. I'm all for cutting bait. Like I've long said that, whether it's just in personal discussions or whatever. Sometimes you just accept that stuff isn't gonna work. And there are players that don't fit systems. There are players that get unhappy, and it's not related to on-ice performance. Sometimes you just need a change, and that's fine. There's a lot to be said for that. My issue with what they did is the return, I know that he didn't produce in his time in the lineup, but he wasn't far removed from everyone assuming he was going to be the next kind of flavor of the month for the Wings, the next guy that they dug up and plugged in. So to think that they took just Tolleson, who's an organizational depth guy at best at this point. I mean, like get a draft pick, get something else. It's really hard for me to believe that there wasn't some other, you know, better kind of return for the guy, because right. At the end of the day, I mean, he's cheap and he's talented, and guys, you know, teams were obviously would have been willing to plug him in and give him a chance. So get something a little bit better than, you know, a ninth defenseman or whatever Tolleson ended up being.
I gotta wonder if there wasn't any market for him based on the fact that he rarely played in Detroit. Yeah, I can't answer that. But, I mean, Tolleson is now signed in Europe. He's gone. For all intents and purposes, the Wings received a fifth-round draft pick now for Villalaino.
Right.
Yeah, in retrospect, it is a terrible return. I got to wonder if his inability to crack the Wings lineup hurt a lot more than it may have seemed at the time. Because, you'd like to think that you could have gotten more than they did, but, you know, if it meant playing him more and watching him turn over the puck more and falling down more and then being kind of a head case on the bench, and, you know, then maybe it was worth, like you said, just cutting bait and getting anything just to get it over with. I can't answer that. I really don't know. But I got to think that the way that it all went down, because they were very high on him, like you said, I got to imagine that something happened where every other team was like, pass, you know, because if the Wings can't deal with someone's head case, then what's to say that we can't?
No, that's valid. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You know, we'll see. I think the other thing to keep in mind too is that, you know, we started down this road a little bit too with Michael Samuelson this year, who went wild in Vancouver and had a career season. And then everybody remembers that he just blew it up in the first round of the playoffs, was leading the playoffs in goal scoring. And, you know, everybody was like, oh my God, what were the Wings thinking getting rid of him? And then he disappeared. So I don't think that we can, you know, definitively say that the Leno deal is a win for the Flyers yet. If they win the cup, sure, you know, they're going to keep that in their back pocket. But that's fine. But how does this guy, you know, mature down the line in the next couple of seasons in Philadelphia? You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. So we can't declare a winner yet, but we'll
And another thing, even if you do lose this deal, if Ken Holland loses this deal, which, you know, it appears that he may have, it appears that he did. He lost this deal. BFD. He's won 400 deals in his life, you know, and he's found gems that nobody else wanted. And I'm willing to say, you know what, this was a deal you had to make. Maybe not for the return, but you had to dump him. You know, maybe not the way that we did and for the return that we did, but you know, something needed to be done. If this is a loss in his book, then that's a very short chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No, and beware the small sample size. That's what you got to say for everything, man. We're talking about a pretty small period of games. So if we're, you know, 9 months from now and we're talking about you know, Leno as a 30 goal scorer, so be it. But it you know, really, you guys are right to keep perspective over all this stuff for sure.
Totally. So guys, I know we want to jump in the last few minutes here and talk about this one of the listener questions we got from Conference Realignment Fund, which is always a good time. But before we go there, Sean, I'm going to start with you. First four games, looking at this right now, if you had to pick a Conn Smythe winner, gun to your head, who is it for each team and why?
Pronger.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaks for himself, I think.
Sorry. Yeah, I know that's brutal. It hurts. It hurts me to say as much as it hurts you guys to hear, I'm sure. And then I think on the other side at this point, man, it's tough to pick for the Blackhawks because, you know, coming into it, Taves is a slam dunk, yep. Right? I mean, he was just off the hook. But the guys, God bless him, he's disappeared. As have most of the leading kind of candidates on that team, which is so remarkable about what the Blackhawks are doing, honestly, because they're not getting contributions really, you know, from any of the guys who helped get him here. Bufflin's been a complete zero. He's just you don't even notice him on the ice anymore. Kane had the one breakaway. I mean, like the guys who have helped him get to this point haven't really showed up all that much. So it's tough to say.
Yeah.
On their end, I mean, I think at this point, and this is definitely strange to say, but I almost think Taves, if they end up winning it, gets it again just by default, just because they haven't had any sort of standout guy that's been there for all four rounds.
Totally, I thought.
But on the Flyers end, I think Pronger, mm-hmm. that's been written already that if the Flyers win, Pronger gets it, and for better or worse, you know, that's not for me to decide, but totally. But people are going to vote for him. That's a done deal.
Yep. Petrella, what about you, man? Who you got?
I'll be honest. I haven't watched a single second of the Stanley Cup Finals this year.
That's brutal.
This is what happens to me every year when, you know, we invest so much. I didn't miss a single minute of Red Wings hockey all year. When they lose, it's like I just need to step away for a little bit. And, you know, I will never miss the final game. You know, so, you know, game six is the earliest this could happen. But since 1991, you know, I was third grade or whatever it was, I've never missed the final game of a final, and I won't again this year. I promise that. It's just one of these things where I can't stomach putting it on. Like, I despise both of these teams and everyone on them so much, and I don't want anything good to come of either. I mean, the best outcome for me would be the earth opening up and swallowing the whole goddamn arena. But since that's not an option, you know, I guess I'd love it if Philly won, because this is clearly Chicago's one chance. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we brought it up earlier. The roster is going to have to be blown up, and I will laugh like a little girl if they happen to just blow it in the final. But that said, I don't know enough about, you know, I follow close. You know, I read about it the next day, and I get people's feelings, and I don't know enough to pick who's deserving of a Conn Smythe. But I will say this, you know, you can't go wrong with a guy like Taves, who, disappear as he might, he is the leader of that squad, and he is as deserving as anyone else for the kind of seasons that they've had since he's come on board. Niemi is a nice goaltender, even though it sounds like he's kind of exploded a little bit in the final. So, you know, I can't pick anybody. All I can say is that, you know, the usual suspects every time we get to Conn Smythe talking are goalie, captain, and then someone who just completely blew everyone else out of the water. And it doesn't sound like there is that third candidate. So there you go. Mm-hmm.
It's a four round tournament, and I think that's going to come into play if the Blackhawks win, because you're going to end up seeing Taves win it. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's you know, there's a handful of games to play yet, but that's more of a testament to how to really how 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 goddamn good he was over the first couple rounds. I mean, he was something to see. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to come into play. But there really is, man. There's not a slam dunk choice based on play in the finals for the Blackhawks yet at all. And it's been actually bizarre to an extent. Host has been as close as they've had to having a dominant offensive player, which is odd.
It's odd too when you look at the way the finals are going like this. Is that, you know, it seems like the Flyers are playing the more complete team game right now, and kind of, I get the impression that Chicago's just kind of skating along on sheer talent at this point. Like, I really do. They don't seem to be put together the right way. They seem a little discombobulated, and go figure. It's not what we're used to seeing. Like last year with Detroit and Pittsburgh, you know, the first time they played, it was Detroit obviously was a strong team that had been together, and they you know, handled a Pittsburgh team that was up and coming. And I think last year you saw two real powerhouses just go at it. Just like they just went and played one of the best series that we're going to see in a long time. And then this year you get this series that's kind of like, the whole idea is that Chicago is the team that should have won this, that is underachieved, and they feel like they're underachieving at this point right now. Whereas you look at Philadelphia, they're overachieving. Obviously there's no way around it. And it's kind of a strange script to be following along with, given what we've seen. So, and then, like you said, nobody on Chicago really wants to seem to step up and win this thing. So, you know, Taves,
nah.
I agree with you guys. Taves has been, he's had a great playoff run. It will probably be him. Pronger, it's pretty much written that it's him. I think Giroux has had a really solid looking playoff for the most part. I agree with you.
Yeah,
he's looked real good, you know, and it depends on what happens in these last 2 to 3 games. Anybody could come out. I'll throw Leno's name in there just for fun. Just because if he keeps scoring goals, and if one of them happens to be a game winner at some point, all of a sudden,
you're right about that.
You make a case for him. So we'll see. 3 games to go. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. Somebody's going to hoist some hardware, and it'll be happening this week. So hey, who knows what'll happen? But we've got a few minutes left here, guys, and we did get a reader question. And I know Sean, you looked over this. I sent you guys the information beforehand. About conference realignment edition. And obviously there's been talks, the talks have been rampant, especially with Ron McLean talking to Gary Bettman this week on the intermission report. And they had a very testy conversation about the future.
That was fun.
That was awesome. Some of the franchises in the league and some of the trouble that they could be in. We received a proposal from one of our listeners.
Yes.
NHL Conference Realignment Edition, and we've been holding on to this for a while. And I'll give you the quick run through, and I'll post this on the site that people can download it when you download the show. But essentially what would happen is that there would be 4 conferences based on geography, north, south, east, and west. 2 conferences would play with 7 teams, 2 would play with 8. So the breakdown real quickly is the north would be Buffalo, Chicago, Columbus, Detroit, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, and Toronto, which would make us division rivals with you there, with you, Gentile. We'd be staring each other down 6 times a year, it sounds like. But
I don't want that.
That would not be fun. But the south would be Atlanta, Carolina, Dallas, Florida, Nashville, St. Louis, Tampa Bay. East is Boston, Montreal, New Jersey, Ottawa, the Islanders, the Rangers, Philly, and Washington. And then in the west, your conglomerate of the West Coast teams, Anaheim, Calgary, Colorado, Edmonton, L.A., the Yotes, Sharks, and the Canucks. The schedule, though, is where it gets a little bit interesting. Every team would play out of conference twice a season, so you would get 46 games for the North and the South, 44 for the East and the West, and so on and so forth, which would eventually lead to a 72-game season, and playoff seeding would get affected in that the top 4 teams would from each conference get in with 16 teams, and the matchups go the traditional 1-4-2-3 that you would see in something like the Frozen Four. So, like I said, we're going to post this up. You can read all the details about it. But, Sean, I'll start with you because, you know, we talked about this a little bit. What do you make of something like this? You know, it's been ongoing discussion for years and years and years now about, especially, and it seems like one of the discussions we hear a lot in Detroit is the wings in the Western Conference makes no sense when you come to the playoff time.
No.
Because they're traveling all over the place, 3 hours, one way, you know. But this idea, any other ideas in realignment, what do you make of stuff like this?
It's hard to say if it's like grounded in reality, honestly. I know this is a listener who came up with this. It's got great ideas mixed in there. But I would love to know how much, if at all, this is like stuff like this has ever actually been discussed. Mm-hmm. And I the biggest thing that sticks out to me, and that maybe this is because I grew up in Pittsburgh, so this is just my own bias coming through. But I don't want the Penguins in that division. So I would probably I would switch Ottawa. You gotta get the Penguins back in with the Rags and the Flyers and the Caps. I would love that. Mm-hmm. But I think that said. The weirdest thing about this is looking at it and seeing that you're going to shrink the schedule to 72 games. Mm-hmm. And your initial reaction is that that's insane, and that it's never going to work. That they would never agree to something like that. But then, just for the simple reason of like statistical consistency, and then it's always been 80 or 82 games and da da da. But I don't know. That's intriguing to me. It really is. I don't dislike that. And I almost wish that stuff like this would get discussed, but I don't know that it is.
It's an interesting concept. I think, and you're right in the sense that when you look at this whole proposal, which is obviously thought out, and there's been some time and some real good thought put into this, and the 72 things is very intriguing. Games is intriguing, but I think, like you said, at some level, this would be such a broad sweeping change that you don't see it happen. Like you think this would have maybe come about after the lockout or something along those lines, and it didn't, and that's fine. Right. But I think it'll be interesting to see, depending on, obviously, as we move back towards the idea that there are some teams that could be on the move here, essentially. And one that I like to focus on is the Atlanta Thrashers. And it's not because, I'm in Seattle, and Seattle's been named as a market that they could potentially go to, a long shot as it may be. But what if you were to take a team like Atlanta and move them into the Western Conference? Somebody is going to have to move out of the West into the East, and it would seem like Detroit would probably be the logical choice. And you may have to restructure some divisions again in the East. So I think that's more of an applicable idea, that Detroit could wind up playing Pittsburgh or Toronto or Montreal in the East again. And remember, back in the 60s, Detroit was an Eastern Conference team. They have some Prince of Wales trophies there. So it's not a terrible idea. I think that, though, it all depends on who goes where and this unstable market right now.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Go ahead, dude.
I think that you're totally right about that, man. Bettman can say all he wants, but we're not going to believe that these teams are in the Sun Belt markets until they're locked in. Mm-hmm. So I would hold off. And honest to God, this is something like I think the biggest hurdle for all this stuff is the geographical stuff is making it work that way. Mm-hmm. And this is a good starting point. And if you flip-flop Atlanta with whether it's Seattle or Kansas City or Winnipeg or whatever, some more western, some further west team, I think that'll change stuff and it would kind of invalidate some of this. But I think this is a good starting point. And like you said, I would wait until all this uncertainty can kind of get solidified a little bit, if that ever happens. And that's up for debate too.
That's a big if. That's a big if.
Putting it nicely.
Yeah.
Up for debate.
Totally. Petrella, I mean, any thoughts on any of this stuff? I mean, it's.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I admire this much work went into something like it. It takes a lot of patience and know-how to kind of build an idea from scratch, because clearly this doesn't exist, in the real world of hockey as of right now. So kudos to this young man. That takes a lot of effort, and, he certainly did his homework. But, that Southern Conference sounds just awful. it sounds like it's like the Southeast Division is – generally the laughingstock of the league. I know Washington in there now, and Washington, it can be argued, and it has been by yours truly, that Washington ran away with the President's Trophy because they got to play those other schmucks six times a year. So, I don't think that it sends the right message to have an entire conference of teams that didn't exist like in 1980. Mm-hmm. Because say what you want about their failure and their attraction of fans You know, I like Tampa, and I like that they have a team. You know, their fans are – they're good fans. They're not – you can't compare them to Toronto and Montreal and Detroit and, you know, everyone else. But do they deserve the recognition of one-fourth of the league in terms of structure? Probably not. And that's not to belittle their existence in the league at all. It's just to say that, look, they – there is – kind of they're up in the air. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know for a fact that the Florida Panthers will be there in 2015. You know, I'd like to say that they would, because I would like all the franchises to be kind of stable and not have to worry about this every year. And, you know, I mean, I'm positive there are fans in Atlanta that love hockey. I'm positive of it, you know, and it would suck for, you know, the handful that there are that are diehard Thrashers fans, because I'm sure there are some, to have to worry about that every summer. So, you know, I think you're both right in saying we got to wait until, you know, there's some sort of like, these are our 30 teams or these are our 28 teams or whatever it is you want to do before you make a sweeping change across the board. Because like it or not, none of those teams in the South, a handful of them in the West, will ever have the kind of stability that Toronto has or Montreal has. And, you know, no team will. I mean, it's fair to say that the original six aren't moving, and it's fair to say that there's a handful of other teams that will never move, and it's fair. But there's no one on earth that can convince me that the Atlanta Thrashers are there to stay forever. You know, mm-hmm. Before we look at a sweeping change of how the league runs, essentially, because I mean, step one is deciding where the teams are. Until we decide that, you know, this is how it's going to be, looking at a massive, massive change won't work. Because like you said, let's pretend Atlanta moves to Seattle. Oh shit, now every conference in the league has to be altered, and you know, who plays who how many times has to be altered. Every single year it's going to be a spin of the, you know, it's going to be a roulette wheel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you have no idea what's going to happen in a year, and that's not fair to the other 29 teams that are stable.
Right.
You know, to say, right, like Sean was just saying about Pittsburgh, yeah, I prefer Pittsburgh not be in the same conference with the Wings, not because I don't want to see them six times a year, but because they deserve to play Philadelphia six times a year. So if right, if we have a situation where we're like, you know, I've gotten used to playing Chicago six times a year, you know, eight times a year as it used to be, and then all of a sudden something changes and it's like, well, we got to stop everything and kind of reorganize things, and you know, all of a sudden the team, yeah, that I built to compete with the Chicago Blackhawks for six times a year is less relevant than it was yesterday. So that it's troubling. Yeah, please go.
How about the Blues in this plan, by the way? I didn't mean to interrupt, but the Blues, man, they would like, they imagine how they feel. They get stuck playing the freaking Panthers, and you know, like that, they would not be happy. You take them out of their natural rivalries with the Hawks and the Wings, and you're like, oh, sorry, you play the Hurricanes now. Tough luck. I mean, like, they're the biggest loser in this out of everybody, I think.
My answer to that is they're the biggest loser historically anyway. Win some shit once in a while, then we can talk about your rights.
Wow. So
now, see, I teed that one up for you, man. I was throwing
you
that
sure
right in the wheelhouse because I was like, I know how Wings fans feel about the Blues. They're like little stepbrother or whatever. So I was throwing that right in your wheelhouse.
Right in the wheelhouse. Petrella takes.
And they do.
Go ahead, dude.
They do have good fans. It's a cool town. I mean, but you know, they've been around forever and have nothing to show for it, including a time when Scotty Bowman was their coach. Dude, Scotty Bowman could have coached my college team to a Stanley Cup. So I have a hard time remembering they're for real, because while they exist and while they certainly play the Wings very hard, and we always have trouble with the Blues, I just don't, you know, May comes around and you're like, oh, that's right, the Blues played too. Like, there's never been a time where you're like, oh shit, we're going to hit the Blues at some point. We got to prepare for this. So I don't know.
If you guys ever forget about the Blues, all you got to do is watch tape of Yzerman's goal again.
That's right. That's right. And those NHL commercials, obviously, the history will be made. We got plenty of that this year, just for fun. The other thing that they put together for us based on this scenario was the playoff matchups here. And I will just quickly run through and say that there are some interesting. It would have looked like the first round would have looked like this. It was San Jose against LA. Vancouver gets Phoenix. Nashville plays Atlanta in a battle of the South. Yes, you gotta love that. I mean, we may get 20 fans.
Craig, by the way, Craig is all about that. Craig thinks that should be like, because he was the Thrashers beat writer for a little bit, but he thinks that should be a consideration. Honest to God, for realignment is having like a natural Southern hockey rivalry between the Preds and the Thrash, which. I'm in Charlotte, like I said, and, you know, whatever Southern hockey, blah blah blah. I could really care less.
I think it'd be interesting. I think it'd be an interesting test, or make sure that they get like those two games against each other a year. Now, don't just play them once at one arena and then do the old we'll get a home game every 2 years out of it. Play them twice, right. See how it goes down, kind of toy with it. But as we move through the rest of it, the aforementioned Blues would drive Dallas in the first round. Chicago would have played Ottawa in an interesting first round matchup. Obviously, Detroit would have rolled over Pittsburgh in their first round matchup. And then you get Washington and Boston, and then New Jersey and Buffalo. So geographically, does make some sense and some interesting matchups, but then it just becomes a one winner, you know, win four games or I guess not, no, because you'd still play your best of seven series, but you would tick down through similar to a Frozen Four fashion in NCAA hockey. So interesting concept, lots to think about.
I think the biggest issue I would have with it is that there's four brackets instead of just two, and the problem with this is this: if the South gets their own bracket, or you know, or the West, or the North, whoever, you know, whatever it may be, if they're the weakest bracket, why should they have equal representation? You know, and that's not to say like East versus West because each team gets eight. Great, you know, if you're trying to find the best teams make the postseason and then keep each single round somewhat even, you can't say, oh, the weak bracket is going to play, you know, this bracket, because that's going to be a disaster. And I, you know, truth be told, I was anticipating it to be a disaster this year because the East was so weak compared to the West in head-to-head that I thought for sure whoever came out of the West was going to absolutely steamroll the East. It's not the case, which is great because it makes for better hockey and better, you know, fandom. But if you have to worry about a weak bracket, you know, or a strong bracket, it's sort of unfair to the rest of the hockey world watching the playoffs because you never know what's going to happen. And I'm not going to say that you wouldn't know what was going to happen in this case, but, you know, that I'd hate for it to be like, oh, you know, we had this first round, you know, if you're talking the Wings, we had this first round matchup against the Penguins, which is hate that should not be reserved for the first round. But if that did happen, imagine like scooting then to the second round against, I don't know, Nashville. It's like that's kind of anticlimactic a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, I don't have an answer for it. I just don't – I don't like the idea of dumbing down the standings, I guess.
Well, I mean, there's different ways – obviously plenty of different ways we can go with it. But always open for interpretation. Always have a little fun with that. So I just – I'm still staring at that first-round matchup between Pittsburgh and Detroit. That would be a
– It doesn't look right.
It would have been like – good lord, that's two Stanley.
Just like zoned out, staring at it. No, it goes okay. So, winner of Wings Pens would end up playing the Blackhawks in the second round. That just seems perverse and strange.
It kind of does. Then you also know that essentially somebody from Nashville, Atlanta, Chicago, or Nashville, Atlanta, St. Louis, and Dallas is destined to wind up in the final four. So one of those teams.
See, that's what I mean. Like, that's exactly what I mean. Like, I mean, the Penguins, and let's pretend the Penguins beat the Wings and then had to play Chicago in the second round. You know, they've already played two Stanley Cup finals.
Right.
And then they have to play Dallas? Like, Jesus Christ, man. Big deal. Like,
it would be interesting. There would definitely be some power conferences, that's for sure. That's for sure. But always having some fun taking a look at stuff like this. It's always a good time. But I'm looking at the clock here, guys. We have been tearing it up for quite a while. We're pushing an hour and a half here, and we'll probably put some listeners to sleep. I know at least I have. But you guys have been freaking awesome on this. We could go on for hours on this one. But I think we're going to put the bow on it and let everybody get on with their day. Anybody, you know, Sean, any final thoughts? We do like to offer up a chance to kind of share a random thought or anything that you want to throw out there. So feel free to chunk something out.
I was thinking, you guys, when I was watching the Armando Galarraga disaster earlier in the week. We were watching it in the the newsroom at Sporting News, and I have never in my life, I've worked there for 2 years, and I have never heard more people react to anything. And I've worked Super Bowls, I've worked everything. I think everybody on the online and Sporting News Today staff, like, just like motherfucked, basically, as soon as that happened. Like, it was unreal. Yep. I've never had more people react. So that's that goes up to you guys. I'm sorry, and I'm a Pirates fan, so you can reverse your pity and give it
right back to you. It's the Galarraga situation, heartbreaking. Obviously, though, his cleats and the first base are going to Cooperstown. They will be in the Hall of Fame, and he's rolling around in that nice Corvette that he has at the. Yeah. Chevy gave him, so, but an interesting moment indeed. Obviously, it sucks as a Tigers fan to see that get taken away. I doubt that I will ever see a perfect game thrown by a Tigers pitcher in my lifetime, other than the one that we saw from Armando Galarraga. But a huge statement in the power of faith as a person and forgiveness. So whatever, blobbity blobbity blah.
There we go.
Yeah, so there it is.
That's nice.
Great.
Whatever. That's a nice note to end on, Chris.
Awesome. Petrella, do you have anything you want to put out there for us, or?
Well, after that, anything I say is going to be rude. But I won't say anything about the final because I'm not the one to ask this time around. But you know, Wings hockey is going to be exciting again, and I'm looking forward to, you know, a second season in this kind of community. Like, I've always felt a part of the community, but you know, the advent of Twitter and with the production line taking off the way it has and meeting guys like you and everyone else at H2H, like, it, I'm really looking forward to starting it up again. And, you know, I say what you will about how the season ended, and I've said it before in print, but I'd trade one Stanley Cup in my lifetime for a year like we had this year, meeting one another and having the kind of memories we created. So, you know, go hockey. I won't pick a team, but I will say go hockey, go community, go us.
There you go. There you go. Go hockey.
Seconded.
There you go. Gentilly seconded it. I'm thirding it. It's awesome. But, you know, awesome stuff, guys. It's been a total pleasure having all of you, having both of you guys on here. Sean, we'll definitely have you back again. And, if you guys want to follow Sean, hit him up at, he's over at the Sporting News. Check out the Grindcast podcast. It's a lot of fun. You can also follow him, at Sean Gentilly on Twitter. For Petrella, you guys obviously know where to find him at. He's at the production line. Twitter at mpetrella, and he's also got this new account going for the production line at TPL Hockey on Twitter, and throwing some cryptic messages out there. I have no idea what to make of him. He just pisses me off with them, so I'm not even going to talk about it. But
you got another couple months of that, baby.
I know, right? Good Lord. Who knows what's happening here? But and then, obviously, for anything the Obstructed View related, you can follow us on Twitter at Red Wings OV. Send us emails, theobstructedview@gmail.com. And then, you know, keep up with the questions, ideas, send them our way. We'll be coming at you, probably at least one more time once the Stanley Cup finals are over. And then we may take a month to regroup, as we get through free agency and whatnot. But that's a wrap for us, guys. On behalf of Michael Petrella from the production line, Sean Gentilly from over at the Sporting News, I am Chris Hollis from Motown Wings. We will talk to you soon. Hey, enjoy the summer. Enjoy the last week of hockey.